on the second season of Dragula, the search for the world's next drag super monster, anime-inspired drag queen Erica Clash was stabbed, shot, fed horrible food, and worst of all, forced to tell the truth. Even though Erica got killed off in a gruesome voodoo doll sequence, like all little good monsters, the grave couldn't hold her back, and her spirit returned to stir up shenanigans on the next episode.
Today, Erica Clash, our favorite New Yorican Harajuku drag queen, joins us to give an exclusive look at Dragula Season 2. Listen as Erica talks about her deep friendships with controversial drag queens Abhorra and Monique Shame, what her mother thought of seeing her son tortured on TV, and why the Boulay brothers might be the most wholesome gay couple on TV right now.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Right now, you are listening to Feast of Fun because for the past 13 years, a listener just like you took the time to support this one-of-a-kind, in-depth program. Won't you take a moment now to ensure that Feast of Fun is around for the future? Visit feastoffun.com/plus and access all 13 years of amazing shows.
On today's Feast of Fun, we have Erica Clash from the second season of Dragula, a drag queen who is hard to kill. Erica was stabbed, shot, pressure to eat her own puke, right?
Well, I chose to eat my own puke, but we were force-fed some really gross stuff, and I was also interrogated under a polygraph.
And worst of all, forced to tell the truth.
You know what? That was the only extermination that could really get my goat, because you can't escape from the truth. And when the truth is damning the way it was, you know, there's no escaping it. But I am the first girl on Dragula ever to do four exterminations and to survive three of them.
And that's, you kind of intentionally sought that out because you were kind of wise in realizing, because you're this sweet, innocent, lovely, dovey little bunny rabbit of love with razor sharp teeth and a, you know, mange growing on the side of your body. What is the disease that wild animals get? Rabies.
Rabies.
Rabies, yeah.
Don't pet that bunny too close because
she'll
bite you.
But mange is also a thing. You see the certain like stray dogs with like a, you know.
Yeah.
You're like that stray dog that when we were kids, we were like, mommy, can we take it home? And their parents are like, no, don't even go near that thing.
Yeah, the parents took the dog out to the back and like shot him. Just not because, not to be mean, just because it deserved, like it just needed to be put out of its misery.
And on Dragula, you know, the world, the search for the world's next drag super monster. Mm-hmm. The show is a reality competition where they're really seeking out an alternative side to drag. And by that, we mean embracing the gritty, the grotesque.
The trashy,
the violent.
The beautiful.
But seeing the beauty in things that we don't normally associate with beautiful.
Yes. So like, it's drag, filth, horror, glamour. So drag to me, that pillar of Dragula means, being so incredibly committed to whatever drag it is that you do, regardless of, you know, is this the popular thing? Is this a trendy thing? Like staying true to your art. And I think that's what I was bringing the most out of anybody on the cast, was like, I was very true to my drag.
And because a lot of people in that situation feel pressure, and so they sort of conform to the group.
Well, you know, like any competition, you know, whether it's Drag Race or whether it's Dragula or if it's a national, you know, pageant, there are criteria. So it's how well you meet the criteria. And this is not, you know, this is not the kind of competition where you show up and just model and do some, you know, little challenges. This is really intense. They put you through the ringer because they're looking to shape one of us into their vision
they're
of
judging,
what a successful alternative drag queen is.
They're not just judging you on the way you look. They're also judging you on your character.
Yeah, yeah. And again, it's how well you fit the criteria of what they're looking for. So I think I did a great job of showcasing who I was, but who I was not what they were looking for. And that's okay, you know?
Well, that's pretty far, though.
How many people can win Dragula each season?
Only one.
Mm-hmm. So everybody else gets eliminated.
Everybody else is a loser.
Yeah, and you know, now we're down to four girls. Three of those girls are not going to win.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing.
Bad. Who are you betting on?
Who am I betting on? I'll answer that question when we get to the top three, because I mean, I know who the top three is, but I don't want to.
You don't want to ruin it.
I don't want to ruin it or make people speculate on Reddit that,
but
you know.
But right now, like, nobody really knows. Like, none of you girls know who they're picking. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Because they want to keep it hush hush.
Now, one thing is that marginalized communities or people who work on the fringe, on the cutting edge of art or drag or culture, tend to suffer a lot. Mm. And when you're going through that experience, it's easy to attack people inside your own community. Mm-hmm. And when we started seeing season two of Dragula, it became very evident that some drag queens were sort of having, bringing in their outside experiences and their quarrels into the workroom. And one of them was Bitch Pudding and Abhorra, the needle-nosed queen from Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah.
And you were there instantly when you were in that situation. You immediately wanted to heal the wound and be sort of a peacemaker. Can you tell us a little bit about why you reacted that way?
Okay, so I knew Abhorra and Bitch before the show. We worked together the night after they did the club Dragula, because as you know, Dragula was a club night, and the last one ever was the night that they competed together. So Bitch Pudding won, and Abhorra was second place.
Hold on a second. So Bitch Pudding and Abhorra were competing in a night the Belay brothers did called Dragula.
Yeah, before
That's
Dragula
the,
was ever
TV show.
Yeah, before Dragula was ever a TV show, it was a monthly competition. Mm-hmm. So, and then they started taking it across the country and realized there's, you know, monster queens all over the country, and we want to. That's how the TV show was born. You know, legend has it. So I knew them before, and I could tell that they knew each other and were friends. But it was also weird because, you know, Bitch Pudding walked in there, you know, into the show with her crown and sash from the, you know, the previous night, and she was celebrating. But anyway, so we get to the show, and, you know, I think a lot of the girls got closer to Abhorra at first, initially. So, and myself included, like, I knew them both, and I knew Bitch Pudding better before we got to the show. But then once we got there, you know, we got to spend more time with Abhorra. So she had certain opinions about Bitch Pudding, and those opinions, you know, informed what everybody else was talking about. So this most recent episode we just saw, which is the Gothic Wedding Challenge, James was pointing out, like, we completely misjudged Bitch Pudding because of how Abhorra was characterizing her.
And we're starting to realize, I guess, that, and maybe we don't see this because of the way the show is edited, but Abhorra isn't such a nice girl.
Well, me, Monique, and Abhorra were really close initially. And Abhorra and I, as it's come out, you know, we were getting close. We never did anything, you know,
sexually,
romantic or sexual, but we were, you know, we were snuggling or bonding, you know.
You put your fingers in each other's holes.
Well, her nostrils for sure, because, you know, sometimes you have a mucus moment that you don't want to see. So I was just like, you know. But anyway,
Here, I have a little doll. A voodoo doll here. Point on the voodoo doll where Abhorra touched you.
We just snuggled.
Oh, that's sweet.
And we knew, like, we knew that any decision to go further than that would just be a bad decision because it could really affect how we were in the competition.
Sure.
It could really affect, and you know, it might have if it had come out that we had done something. Mm-hmm. I don't know how the Belays would have felt about it.
Because wouldn't you be embarrassed if that was part of the truth session?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad it didn't happen because
they didn't ask you.
Yeah.
They asked
yeah.
you had you had sex with any other contestants,
and I didn't. Like, so, but anyway, going back to the whole drama, you know, you see it early on in the show, everybody jumps on Bitch Pudding, based on Abhorra's, like, whole thing. Mm-hmm. But at a certain point, like, you know, once we got around to the sci-fi challenge, and Drac was kind of pushing Abhorra to resolve the drama, I could tell that it was getting tired. Like, everybody was just like, you know, the cast was getting smaller. Like, we could just see, like, you know, it was holding Abhorra back. So, you know, and she helped me a lot, you know, supporting me through the show, because I think we kind of had, like, opposite journeys of, like, I was learning to become more of a monster. She was learning to become more of a nice person. So that was kind of what came out of that was, you know, and also people jumped on Bitch Pudding because she was supposedly not a monster. And then, you know, I said the whole thing of, you know, we all deserve to be here because we've all paid a price for being different. I was really defending myself as much as I was defending Bitch Pudding, because I felt this whole time very paranoid that people were going to come for me.
Because were you kind of surprised even that you were cast, because they were looking for the world's next drag super monster? But you've always been kind of like anime cutesy in some ways.
Well, you know, I first of all, Dragula had not even entered my mind as a possibility until Vander, last season's winner, encouraged me to audition. Darren Stein encouraged me to audition.
You guys have a very similar aesthetic.
I wouldn't wouldn't say so. I mean, I wouldn't really say
in
we
fact,
have similar.
If you asked me for a drag, when I met Vander Von, when I first met you in Austin, Texas, I thought for a second, I was like, is that Vander?
Like, I don't see many similarities.
Because you have a similar build.
Well, we have
a
similar build.
Similar color palette.
Similar face shape, I guess.
Yeah, and you guys also have that sort of like very bright colors and pop art aesthetic.
That's true, yeah. She does a very pop art ghoul kind of look sometimes. But
whereas you're more like anime and gaming kind of culture.
Yes, and Harajuku, like street fashion, all that stuff. But then, you know, and I also didn't know that season two was going to be open to people that were not in LA. So I was living in San Francisco at the time, and people were encouraging me to audition. I was like, oh, I should just try this out. And, you know, I didn't feel like Drag Race was the right fit for me, but, you know, until Dragula came along, that was really the only way for us to get on television.
What is a monster to you? Like, when you hear the world's next drag super monster, doesn't that sort of connote some negative things? But what's the positive aspects of a monster?
Well, of course, you know, you have to embody drag filled horror glamour, so you have to be trashy. You have to be gorgeous, and you have to have some level of darkness in your drag. But the thing that makes a super monster for me, or that is the sort of intangible essence of a super monster, is somebody who is incredibly committed to their drag, who preaches whatever, you know, style of drag that they love. They do it to the nth degree. They hone their craft and really are polished with what they do. And they do something that really pushes buttons and is countercultural. And one of the things, you know, that I was trying to preach on the show was that, you know, nerdy queer people are just as marginalized as the grunge, you know, the grunge queens or whatever. And Harajuku street fashion in itself is very countercultural. It's all about young people doing stuff that their parents would not necessarily be glad that they were doing. So
it's men dressed up in little girls' clothes.
Well, but even like something like Ganguro, yeah, which, you know, people confuse that with blackface. It's not blackface. It's about reclaiming darker skin. Stuff like, you know, in a world where lighter skin in general is favorable.
Ganguro is what?
Ganguro?
Yeah.
It's like when you paint your face really, really tan.
Okay.
So it's like tan skin, darker skin. Like, it's about reclaiming those things. Because especially like when I did that Japanese tourist character on Dragula, like she had gloves on because, you know, like tourists like that, they don't want they don't want to get any sun. Mm-hmm. They want to enjoy the outdoors. They don't want to get sun. They often wear like sun visors, stuff like that. So all this to say, like, Harajuku and like all that is very in itself countercultural. So I didn't really see that much of a disconnect between like my drag not being fit for Dragula. It was just, you know, on the surface, it seems very cutesy and very, you know, but it's not mainstream drag what I do. So it felt like, you know, my work was cut out for me from the beginning, and it did feel like an uphill battle to try to adapt into what the boys were looking for. But I had no doubt in my mind that I was an alternative drag queen.
So you and all these unconventional contestants mm-hmm. got together in Los Angeles to mm-hmm. compete.
Yep.
And instinctually, you really were you're a very loving person, and you want to give a lot out to people, and you really connected with Abhorra, the needle-nosed queen from Atlanta, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
What was your initial attraction to each other?
Well, I mean, my type is like very like skinny, nerdy, you know, kind of weird. Like, you know, my boyfriend is an engineer, so he's like a big tech nerd. So like that, like she visually was kind of my type. And I also...
So you're just like started... What's your boyfriend's name?
His name is Johannes.
So you were like... I'm not going to call you Abhor, I'm going to call you Johannes. Now put on this mask.
Or a brown paper bag. You know, and she and I and Moniki became really close as friends in the first, yeah, like 2 weeks, you know, while Moniki was still there. So, and then, you know, early on,
so
like,
you became friends with some of the most controversial contestants from the season.
I guess so. Mm. Without really trying to be.
Was it because maybe these individuals are like hurting, and you just kind of have an instinct to, when you see a wounded animal, to like want to caress it or take care of it?
I don't know where this instinct comes from, and I didn't do that consciously, but you know, Moniki has been through a lot in the last few months, and I've been there as a support system. Sochi Mochi and Frankie Doom are also really close to her, so we've just tried to be a support system to her, but also check her when she's, you know, when we disagree with something that she says that she does. But anyway, going back to Abhorra, like, you know, my boyfriend and I are very affectionate, so like I was missing that human contact. And you know, when you're in this stressful situation, like, of course, think people are gonna hug, they're gonna, you know, cuddle, whatever. So that's
did your boyfriend think about your relationship with Abora? Was he like, you substituted me for her?
No, I mean, well, I mean, we've been open, so it's not like it's not like I'm forbidden from ever cuddling with anyone.
But did he understand why you were reaching out?
Yeah,
to
of course.
Her?
And once I you know, once I was able to, I was very upfront with him about it, and I said, this happened, this didn't happen. Mm-hmm. It's gonna be on record on the show. So he was cool.
I think your boyfriend loves you, and
he loves me,
and
I
wants
love him.
The best for you. And because of that, he saw the first episode, and you're being stabbed with needles.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that he was really distressed by that.
Yeah, he couldn't watch it. You know, it's a funny story. His brother was visiting from Germany
when you were watching.
Yeah, when I wasn't in town. I was in LA for Halloween, but they watched it the night that it came out, and they were all like freaking out. My mom was like, "I'm gonna kick the boule's ass."
Because your mother's Puerto Rican.
She's like, "They're gonna collect this ass whooping, honey."
She's gonna pull some Puerto Rican judo on her.
Yeah, my mother. Yeah. You know, she's a
you
hardcore.
Don't know what kind of crazy shit.
She's a hardcore.
Erica
you know,
Clash's mother's
New York
Rican.
You know. Grew up in the 70s, like, she will kick your ass. But my mother is also like the kindest, most sweet person. She always taught me to never let adversity change you as a person.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you tell her like to expect something really like it's gonna be sickening?
Yeah, I said, Mom, you know, some things happened on the show, but I said, you know what? I'm happy, I'm healthy, I consented to do all of those things, and I'm proud that I did all of those things. And she was like, oh Lord. She was not
so she
was
knew
not
it was gonna be terrible.
Yeah, but she was like, I'm gonna kick their asses for doing that to my baby. You know, she said that her uterus was flipping around when she was watching the piercings, you know.
But you say it's made you a stronger person. That
absolutely
that experience of that first experience of getting those needles, you said you after that you could handle anything.
Nothing fucking scares me anymore. And you know, I would do any of the exterminations that I didn't get to do.
Can I see the this is something we haven't shown, but
there's a picture of it on my Instagram, but
let me take a look in person.
There's two
people.
Scars. There's two scars from
okay, we're gonna play doctor. Take your shirt off here.
Yeah. There's two scars from when the big needle at the end, when it went in and came out.
That how scar thick, looks permanent,
how thick
people.
Was that needle?
It was an 8-gauge. I don't know what the technical, but it was big.
So it's about the dimensions of one, of a cocktail straw.
Yeah, like a thick cocktail straw.
Damn, girl.
But what? Not like a straw from a McDonald's or something.
No, not a McDonald's straw. No. Okay.
You know, those coffee stirring
straws. But you know what? Even
McDonald's.
If they were like, we're going to put a fucking McDonald's straw through you, I'd be like, let's do it, bitch. At that point, I was, you know.
Did you said to me that had the Boulé brothers asked you to eat dog shit, you would have done it.
Yeah.
You're a divine
moment. I'll do it
moment.
Right now. I'll do it right
Jesse,
now.
Jesse, squeeze one ounce. Actually, I tried.
But
and
you
get
know,
him not
a little little
ounce.
Known fact that was edited out was I was in the top for the Rock and Roll Challenge when they did the tattooing. Now I didn't know they were going to tattoo the girls because they keep all the exterminations a secret until the camera is rolling and they tell
sure.
us. So I said, well, I'm not in the, like they said, you know, Erica, we love torturing you. You're really good at it. I was like, well, if you want to torture me this episode, like feel free.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do whatever extermination you want me to do.
Because
by that point I was fearless.
What tattoo would you have gotten?
My initial thing was to get something like a Mount Rushmore of like shitty politicians, like a Donald Trump, a Hitler. but it would be more of like a reminder of what we can't let happen in our world anymore.
Sure.
Like a never again kind of thing.
No. You could have gotten RuPaul's Drag
changed.
Race logo on your. Or even better yet,
that would
have Dracula. In the shape of RuPaul's Drag Race logo.
Somebody also had the idea of drawing a picture of RuPaul getting Eiffel Towered by the Boulé brothers.
What does Eiffel Towered
spit
mean?
Spit roasted.
Spit roasted, yeah.
Hold hands.
Yeah.
But then on the top you do the high five.
Right, exactly. That's the Eiffel Tower. So that would be pretty sickening. We may or may not get in legal hot water for that one, so I don't think they'd allow us to do that, but.
Yeah, I mean, you were shot with a paintball gun,
mm-hmm.
which hurt, I
Did
imagine.
It hurt?
That hurt, but it was a superficial pain. Like, it went away after a few seconds. But it was more so the stress of, I'm about to get shot. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So,
you
like, that whole extermination challenge.
It in their face and in their groin.
Oh,
I hit
Disasterina in the nuts.
Yeah.
Ooh.
One of, like, the three times that I actually hit her, because as much as I love video games, I'm not a first-person shooter type
of
queen.
Yeah, what was the problem with hitting them? Was you just couldn't aim, or was it just
too just
much excitement?
Yeah, it just wasn't. It was just, you know, if you're not used to shooting a gun. I had never shot a gun of any kind before. You know, you're not used to what's going on. You're stressed. You know, it's hard to see. it's nighttime, all that stuff, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, no excuses, because Disaster fucked me up.
Yeah.
Kendra had experience in the military, Kendra Onyx, so she got James, like, everywhere.
She slayed him.
She killed James,
you know, you brought up Disasterita, and it kind of surprised me, because you say that that's not her real accent.
Well, I mean, the thing about Disasterina is, and I'm glad this is on the show, mm-hmm. because, you know, there are straight people out there that do drag, and the mm-hmm. kind of, you know, it's like, you know,
he's straight.
He's straight. He has a wife and a stepdaughter. The thing is, like, that is so alternative. Like, in the mainstream drag, you don't really see a straight mm-hmm. drag queen, and you don't really see that many drag queens that are a character 100% mm-hmm. of the time, you know. So that was really awesome to see on the show. Because
is it fair to say her accent isn't real, because it's kind of like, you know, in drag it's all theater, and so maybe her affectation creates the illusion that she is from someplace else other than, like, you know, Peoria, Illinois. Where is she from?
Correctly, she grew up in Illinois, but
yeah.
The thing about her is, like, you know, that, like, you know, bio queens bring something specific to drag, because a lot of them have, like, a background in the burlesque scene. I feel like straight drag queens, and I could be generalizing, but I feel like a straight drag queen that's like Disasterina, who's really coming at it from an actor's point of view, and has and she has also years and years of experience in lots of different kinds of art.
Okay.
So she's very crafty. Anyway, she does bring such a unique perspective to drag, and I feel like that I'm so glad that was on Dragula. You know,
yeah, because it's very rare to find, like, a straight cis male doing drag. The only, like, straight people I know doing drag are trans people,
she wasn't a straight person, or it's like, people don't do that kind of drag, that, like, kind of character drag, you know, like, the average, like, you can be a straight drag queen and still do, like, regular drag queen things, whatever that means, you know what I mean? Like, but Disasterina brings something so unique, but so valid, and so, like,
Robin Williams
be straight, but she's so queer minded, you know. Like, if you saw her extermination scene last night with the cone titties and everything,
the tribute to Psycho.
Yeah, she's just like, I love her so much.
There's, you know, Barry Humphries, who does Dame Edna, and Robin Williams, who does Mrs. Doubtfire, and certainly from the 1970s, whose name I'm blanking out.
But, you know, there's a long history of male actors, you know, straight male actors doing drag. And again, they attack it from an actor's point of view, not from a drag queen's point of view, if that makes sense.
They're not embodying it as an identity for themselves necessarily. And that's probably because they're afforded the ability to make that distinction because of their, you know, heterosexuality or their cisgender status.
And yeah, they maybe don't have, I mean, if you look at, like, any average, like, Hollywood actor, male actor who's done drag for a role, it's like, they don't live the life of a queer person. They don't have to be queer minded. They're just playing a part. And it's also easy for straight people to make fun of, or to find drag to be funny in this way of like, you know, oh, look at this straight guy, you know, dressing up in drag. But for us, it's an art form. It's it's real. It's but, like, what our life is.
He goes out to clubs and he actually lip syncs to music in front of a crowd.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, he does, but he also, Disasterina also, works a lot on her YouTube channel. So she's a self-made artist. She has her own projects that she does. It's not just about, you know, doing the gig, so to speak. She is a true artist to me.
Jane's Majesty is a really amazing visual queen who, because of the fact that she's really calling to task Abhorra's latent self-doubt or low self-esteem, she's coming across a little bit as a bully on the series so far.
I was not, like, and I knew what happened in the episodes because they all told me, but I was, like, really gagged at how hard James was being on Abhorra. Like, they were beating the dead horse just a little bit for me. But then again, it's like, you don't see, like, there was a lot of time between the sci-fi challenge and the Scream Queen challenge. And especially given the fact that she felt like Dolly had thrown in the towel. I mean, we all could tell that she was just not, whatever, for whatever reason, feeling that extermination, and she just didn't give it. Abora felt like, and everybody else felt like, it would have been her to go. And so she kind of felt really down about that. And I think that maybe influenced her negativity and her, and that caused her to be so bitchy to us, because she really was. So, you know, we're all spending so much time together over the course of the filming. You know, you start to get annoyed with certain people, or you start to become like, you know, freakishly close to other people. And so behavior starts to get on your nerves. And also the competition was getting really difficult. It was, you know, hard. It was harder and harder to tell who was going to go next at that point. So I think I don't blame Abora for being, you know, for letting the competition get to her, because I think it all did get to us in their own way. But you didn't see on camera like how bitchy she was, mm-hmm. and how much we all kind of felt on the same page. So when it came time, you know, for the cameras to roll, we were all kind of, you know, like I said, on the same page about how we felt, mm-hmm. how she was treating us.
So was she trying to be like in front of the cameras a little nicer in front of the cameras?
No.
But off camera, she's like, you fucking
No,
cunt,
I don't think at all. I think she genuinely could sense, and she told me, like, she sensed that we felt differently about mm-hmm. her after, mm-hmm. you know, leading up to the Scream Queen Challenge. And she was fully engaging with everything that we were saying. Like, she wasn't denying it. She wasn't, you know, we really did have a dialogue, and as much as it sounded like we were coming down on her, like, we just, you know, we didn't mean to, I didn't mean to be mm-hmm. a bitch to her. I was just explaining to her how I felt in a very honest way, in a very much like, I love you way. And I even told her when I got eliminated, I was like, bitch, take this time that you have and kill this fucking next challenge. You know, I wanted to empower her mm-hmm. more than anything.
Yeah. Cause if you don't kill that challenge, that cat challenge kills you.
Well, I would have been mad. True, yeah. I would have been mad if Abora had gotten eliminated. Cause then I would have said, well, me or Dolly, like, we went home for nothing. Like, mm-hmm. really?
In the Truth or Dare challenge, or just the, when they hooked you guys up to a lie detector, they asked you, do you think you have what it takes to win this contest? Mm-hmm. And you answered truthfully. You said no.
Yeah. And that, for me, like, I made it very clear to them. This got edited out, but it was very clear, like, I don't think I will win, but I fucking want to win. And so, like, I tried to make it very clear to them that this was not me in any way giving up or throwing in the towel. I was just attacking the question in a logical way, because I'm a realist. I'm a logical person. So for me, like, based on their criteria and me not meeting those criteria, and them not really, you know, being into what I was serving them, I was like, yeah, like, when you look at how everybody's performed over the course of the competition, I've performed the worst out of everybody who's left. My drag is not in alignment with what they're looking for. So no, I don't think I will ultimately win.
Aren't you saying this because you're not willing to acknowledge a certain level of feeling that you don't deserve what you have so far?
What do you mean?
Like, you feel like in some ways there's a latent, you know, low self-esteem. And I think that's...
There was not for me. There was not.
Because I think for drag queens, it's really hard sometimes to be vulnerable. And, you know, I think you were in a really vulnerable situation there. And I thought that was really endearing, actually.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, again, like, I was answering honestly and I was answering logically. If they said speak from the heart, which is what the pretense was originally, because they didn't tell us we were going to be hooked up to a polygraph. They just said answer honestly. So I answered honestly. I said, well, do I think I'll win? Probably not, but I want to win. I said, you know, I don't put my focus on am I going to win or am I not going to win. I just want to do my best and prove to you every second that I have that I am the next drag super monster, because, you know, knowing what you're up against, knowing that what odds are against you is no excuse to not, you know, give it everything you've got. And that's really what I was bringing to the show, was like, my drag was not necessarily in alignment with what they were looking for, but I still fucking tried my damnedest, because I believe so much in what Dragula is, and I believe that I'm right for Dragula.
Well, that's what I really appreciate about, like, getting to know you better, is that you're willing to do anything, you know, whatever it takes to engage with an audience, to explore your artistry, but also you're a really good listener, actually, and you're really willing to do things that put you in an uncomfortable, vulnerable, and dangerous situation. And not every artist is willing to do that.
Well, you know, I think these difficult situations have value. So, like, it wasn't about, for the piercing, it wasn't about, okay, how much can I get through this? It's like, no, how much can you achieve? Like, how much can you get done?
Sure.
And so that was my attitude throughout the show, was like, you can do this. Like, you can achieve, like, you know, whatever you want, but you just have to want it. And so, of course, you know, it just wasn't for me to win, but I gained a lot, and I What I love is that I kind of hammered the point home that monsters come in a lot of different forms.
Even adorable little rabid bunny rabbit shapes.
Well, and you know, the Boulets, like when they were, you know, and during casting and everything, they're like, we love what you do. And we love that you're not the typical Dragula. Mm. So, and I think like, just like, you know, with Drag Race has continued to broaden what a successful Rue Girl is, you know, we got to continue to broaden what a successful Dragula queen is.
Because we know monsters come in all shapes and sizes.
But enough about Lady Bunny.
So
what about Lady Bunny?
You guys spent a lot of time imitating Lady Bunny on the set.
Yes. So me, Monique, and Abora were really close. But this was really, Abora started this, because as soon as she got in the house, she'd be like, hey, girl. Like, she would do the whole, you know, girl. And then we would do all the quotes from her audience warm-up Drag Race season 4 finale, where she was like, did you hear that Justin Bieber has a 12-inch cock? It's in his ass. It belongs to Usher. So we just had so much fun.
Yeah, I never got tired of hearing that joke.
No, it's great. And yeah. Her jokes are, they're perfect. So we had a lot of fun. I'm also really good at doing like voice impersonations. So like, hi everybody, it's the Zestarina here for 69, new 69 on your side. Make sure to watch Dragula on Halloween.
She's a wild and crazy drag queen.
And I also do a really good James Majesty. Hi, everybody. I'm James Majesty. You can call me Your Majesty for short. We also had this joke. So, you know, Lady Bunny has this joke. On a scale of 1 to Rihanna, how big is your forehead? I changed that to from a scale of 1 to James Majesty, how big is your ego? And she seemed to love it. It was all with love. It was all with love.
Mm.
A love for hurting her feelings. But, you know, I have to give really a lot of credit to the Boulet brothers, who, unlike other judges, maybe they're willing to showcase or put out there that they don't always agree on things.
Yeah, I thought that was amazing last mm-hmm. night. You know, we had Drac and Darren on one hand, like really not feeling what Abora was doing. And then you have Swan and Bible Girl on the other side, living, absolutely mm-hmm. living. So I totally agree with their decision to make her versatile, to make her the winner and the loser of the challenge.
Very creative.
Mm-hmm. But you see, that is totally, like, to me, that was the height of what Dragula should be. Like pushing buttons, like Abora completely pushed buttons.
I don't know if it's necessarily like a Dragula thing. I just really appreciate to see a gay couple in media anywhere not agree on things and be at peace with that. You know, it's like, I know they're going to go home and be kind and loving
and
to each other.
Right.
And you know,
each other.
And you know, and, Oprah, and you know, there. But and then on the other hand, and then you have on the other hand,
and the butler.
Well, and then, you know, that's really rare, because then you always see, like, I'm sure Oprah and Gayle King have disagreements, but you never see those happen on camera.
Well, they're not married to each other.
Right.
You know, but I think it's very rare to actually see people embracing conflict in a way that's healthy and constructive.
Mm-hmm.
And especially, I think, for drag, we can all learn from that quite a bit, you know?
Yeah.
You know, this just recently, Bob the Drag Queen posted on, I guess he got into an exchange with a fan of his, because the fan came to one of his meet and greets and asked for a photo, and Bob did his, you know, stoic, very, you know, blank expression on his face that is the way that he likes to present himself in photographs with people.
Yeah, he does that face a lot.
And if you smile all the time for every picture, you're going to get wrinkles.
Which, if you look at my face, I love to smile, and I have lots of wrinkles. So, you know, part of it is like...
Well, we can Botox those away now if you want.
We're trying, baby, but it doesn't work. It does nothing.
So the fan was complaining about...
He asked him for a picture, and I'm not sure if it was a meet and greet or it was just after a performance. And so he asked him for a photo, and, you know, Bob obliged. But I guess the guy wasn't happy that the way that he didn't smile, and he maybe didn't like the way he acted.
So let me read a little bit about the exchange. And part of me is like, you know, I just want to bring this up because... it's about conflict and how we handle conflict.
Mm.
Last night, this is what this gentleman said. Last night, I met the current reigning. I've never been more upset. I get shows take their toll, but have courtesy for fans. So rude. And Bob responds, I want you to tell me what I said to you that was rude. What's the cunt thing that I said to you? And the fan responds, "You didn't say anything. It was your attitude towards a fan that was shitty. That's all. I get that you have your personal stuff and just did a show. But if you didn't want to take a photo, I'd been fine with that." And then Bob responds, "In summation, I did what I did you wanted, but not in the way that you wanted it. Because of that, I'm a dick. Does that sound about right?" And Keith responds, "In summation, you took a photo, but were really shitty about it. They do say never meet your heroes." And Bob responds, "I'm not a fucking hero. I'm a drag queen from Atlanta, Georgia. Go worship real heroes. Cops, nurses, teachers, teachers, social workers. And when you do, expect them to be human and have very much human days." And then this all continues quite some bit, and it kind of escalates. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, it boils down to the fan did not enjoy the exchange that they had with the artist because they felt the artist wasn't present for a photograph.
Mm-hmm.
What you have similar experiences. What's your take on this? How would you handle this?
I've never had anybody say that to me, like I was shitty to a fan.
But you like to have a very stoic face when you have your photo taken, where you're not smiling.
No, it's my fucking drag. Like I do whatever the fuck I want in a picture. You don't fucking own me. Like if I were Bob, I mean, I think she handled that really gracefully, and I probably would handle it in a similarly graceful way. But my feeling actually is like, you don't fucking own me. You paid for a minute and a half of interaction and a picture. If you do the meet and greet, right? If you pay for meet, that's what you get. Okay, you can't tell me like how I'm gonna pose or how I should smile. Then again, I wasn't there, so like maybe Bob was just having a rough day. But like she's allowed to have a fucking rough day.
But it's
like, it's this sort of like entitlement. Like, oh well, you didn't do this in the way that I wanted. Well, if you want to do a certain thing, like be transparent also, like don't be mad if I don't smile in a picture, if you didn't ask me to smile, right. But also like, I kind of take issue with you asking me to smile in a picture.
Mm-hmm. And you know, you hear this complaint from women a lot, like guys will just randomly come up to women and be like, why don't you try smiling, or you'd be that prettier pisses me off, if you smile.
That pisses me off so, you know? Much because they don't want you to smile. Mm-hmm. They just want you to be pleasant for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's a whole other issue. And I'm very sensitive to women's issues because I grew up with a single mom and two mm-hmm. much older sisters. Mm-hmm. So like,
but it's about control.
About control. It's like, but that pisses me off because it's the most insidious kind of sexism mm-hmm. where you have someone or just like the most insidious kind of like objectification where it's like, are you here to have a genuine interaction with someone or are you trying to treat someone like an object?
And that's the thing with celebrity worship. When you call somebody who's a celebrity your hero, is really you're objectifying them in many ways. You're
I take issue with that too.
The objectifying a woman and objectifying a celebrity, in some ways they're different in many ways, but in some ways they're exactly the same.
Well, they have that common thread mm-hmm. of it's not about what you're actually talking about. Mm-hmm. They just want you to be a certain thing to fit an idea of what you are to them. But that's a whole other issue. And it also raises the issue of like being present in mm-hmm. the moment. So like, if you're more concerned about the picture that's being mm-hmm. taken than actually talking to someone that you want to talk to, like if you really admire someone and want to pick their brain, go mm-hmm. for it. But are you taking the picture to have that memory? Are you taking the picture maybe to show your friends or to post it on Facebook and get a lot of likes out of it?
Well, you know, what's wrong with paying money to have your photo with Santa Claus and put it on the family mantle? It's mm-hmm. not like you're a fan of Santa Claus. You just wanted a photo with Santa.
Right. So it's like, you know, don't.
So here's a predicament that I'm noticing a lot of artists have, which is they depend on the revenue from meet and greets mm-hmm. to pay their bills. Mm-hmm. And that requires can be very tedious meeting hundreds of people at a time.
It's exhausting. And I'm not like, you know, the Dracula girls don't tour at that level yet. I mean, we're working on it. Yes, sorry.
So what kind of solution can we present to people out there who are meeting and photographing lots of people at a time in order so both parties feel like they're being taken care of?
Well, when you're doing a meet and greet, there's typically a handler, and you're in line, and you have a photo, and you're told when to move on and stuff like that.
Wait, hold on a second. Let me laugh. Handlers? No, literally, it's just you and 100 people, and may the mob be kind to you.
Well, I did the meet and greet at Austin Drag Fest. There was somebody like helping move it along.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like here's a thing. Maybe is it okay to turn to the person really quickly and say, "How? What kind of photo would you like to take with me? Do you want me to be happy, sad, mysterious?"
I don't think they should really be directing me at that level.
Or can
I think,
you then say, "I'm known for this kind of photo. Is that okay with you?" So that way,
No, I don't know, because you're basically
you're coming to a restaurant and you ordered, you know, a salad and you got a steak. You know what I'm saying?
I'm sorry. I don't want to be controlled at that level. I take pictures the way I want to take pictures. If you don't want to do my meet and greet, don't come.
But is it? Do you think that the public has unrealistic expectations of what they can expect from a photo?
Yes.
And is it wrong to then say, make some sort of disclaimer? This is what kind of experience you're going to get?
No. You don't owe that. I'm sorry. I don't know why I feel so passionate about this. You don't owe anybody anything like that. If you pay for a meet and greet, you're going to get a picture. And I believe, like, if I were to do a meet and greet, like, for me, it would be like, "Hey, do you want a photo? But more so, it would be, "Hi, how are you? What's your name?" Mm-hmm. Then they would say something nice. They'd say, "Oh, thank you so much. Da, 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 da." That to me is more what a meet and greet should be about. It should not be about, "Oh, I want this rehearsed, perfect picture."
One example is that I've seen at meet and greets, people say the exchanges need to be short. Please keep it under a minute. That's like, I've seen that happen.
Yeah, that's valid,
and so
because
people don't
we live in the real world.
That the meet and greet is too brief. So why can't we have that as well?
Well, I agree that there should be transparency. So if there's a long line and you have a handler, you know, say, "Okay, well, we have to be quick," because, you know, like, if you think about DragCon, people lining up for hours to meet like one queen, mm-hmm. right? There needs to be transparency in the interest of like being efficient, because you also, you know, if somebody's going to wait in line for hours, you want to make sure that they have their time and that they're respected. So I would say, you know, having transparency about, okay, you get one picture, you get a minute tops. After that, go nuts. But just be clear, if you're paying for this, you're going to get this. If you're paying this amount, you're going to get this. And that's what you get. It's up to you as a consumer of whatever to decide, do I want to pay for that or do I not want to pay for that?
We don't know if this guy was a consumer at all. He may have just been at the bar that she was performing at and just, "Hey."
Yeah, I have no context. Right? We weren't there for that interaction. Yeah. Sometimes people want to fight with you regardless.
Mm-hmm. Even if Bob did everything and said, "Hey, it's going to be a minute. I'm not going to smile. I'm going to be out of drag. This is how it's going to go." He might have still done all this behavior. We don't really know.
Yeah,
and
of course.
Part of it is, and I will just put that out there, that sometimes people want to fight with you regardless of what you do. And so then another question I'm posing out there is putting this in a public space the best way to handle this? Because ultimately, you know, does it create any solutions, or does it just punish somebody for being, mm-hmm. you know, because this guy, he may be, all he wants is a fight with Bob.
Right. And that's exactly the question of what were you looking for? This guy got
what he wanted, mm-hmm. which was a fight with Bob.
Mm-hmm. It begs the question again of, what were you looking for out of this experience? Did you really want to connect with someone that you respect and admire? Or did you just want a picture to hang up? Maybe he wanted a fight. Or did you just want Instagram followers out of it?
Ultimately got. And so the question is, do you want somebody who wants a fight with you, do you want to give that to them?
Me personally?
Well, anybody, like, in that situation. For me, when somebody behaves that way, and we've had situations like that, I can't engage with them, because ultimately I'm feeding into their negativity. Right. And just to give it a little bigger perspective, both Bob and this gentleman spent an afternoon having this exchange when they could have, you know, been doing other things to pursue their lives.
Could have been sucking some dicks instead.
I was probably sucking dick when this whole exchange happened. So jokes on them, because I win.
And I don't, you know, and I have to say, Bob, just for the record, handled it like a champ. I don't know if I could have handled it any better, but I just want to present to everybody, when you're getting into a fight this lengthy mm-hmm. on the internet, I always, you know, defer to Rosie O'Donnell. Sometimes she just keeps the fights one exchange and it's done, mm-hmm. you know,
or just pick up the phone and call. Well, you
well,
just
can't,
yeah, they
you don't
obviously
want
can't
to talk
do that.
To this person,
but I'm saying,
know?
like, if you have a disagreement with someone, just like, there's nothing to be gained from airing it out on publicly. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if I had a fight with my mom, I wouldn't mm-hmm. go tell people about it.
People typically do it because it's attention seeking behavior. They want the crowds to be like, "Yeah, you tell them and we'll all rally around you. And aren't you wonderful for putting that person into their place?"
Well, and part of it is, I think, you know, we're very attracted to negativity, you know, and I just think, like, in terms of, we're, you know, what I'm about is supporting artists and helping people be more creative and get out of their ruts. And when we're sort of like fighting with each other, even for very justified reasons, it keeps us from our bigger purpose, which is being artists and being creative and loving people.
Yeah. Well, you know, just in terms of like this kind of conflict, I think it's okay to have a dialogue with a community member that maybe you respect, that admire, and that is successful. Like, for example, I don't remember what it was, but Heklina said something that somebody disagreed with. And it was just a stupid, like, drag show joke from what I could understand. But it was seen as problematic by certain people in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. But they were able to have a dialogue about it. So, like, that person maybe posted something and it got attention. But Heklina was big enough to say, okay, well, let's talk about it. And that person was also big enough to receive that offer to talk about it. And I think that was really productive. But, you know, I've never been that girl to have drama on the internet. It's just like, I can't. I'm too busy trying to do my art and, like... It's tiring. I'm getting tired just talking about it right now.
I think inevitably, you know, it's something that we all face sooner or later. And so I think, you know, mentally preparing for it when it does happen is really important. Mm-hmm. And ultimately having healthy relationships with everybody is a great thing to do. Even somebody who may not be well that day and is looking for a fight deserves your best love too.
Right. And you know, with Abora on the show, like I was not trying to bully her in any way. It was me just pointing out behavior that I didn't like, because, you know, if I acted a fool when I was a little kid, my sisters would fucking tell me. They would be like, you're out of order. So like it was, but it so it's more of like a, this isn't right. Like, I disagree with this, or I disagree with this. Let's make it better.
And I think that maybe that's why I'm bringing up issue with you, is not to get you to rehash other people's problems, but because of the fact that you took on this peacemaker role on Dracula, and that was a very conscious effort, and this is a reflection on your nature as an artist. Well, for me,
It wasn't really conscious. That's just naturally how I was on the show.
So you weren't aware of that?
No, I guess, but for me, like, you know, with the whole episode one, like, bitch putting you're not a monster thing, like, yeah, I came across as I was defending her. I was speaking more generally, but I was also in the back of my mind kind of paranoid that people were going to come for me early on and say, well, she's not a monster. She doesn't deserve to be here. She's weak. She's this. Like, that's maybe part of why I worked so hard in the extermination challenges, because I felt like people were going to underestimate me.
Now, Peaches Christ and Coco Peru both were the queens on the episode. Spoiler alert. So if you don't want to hear this, skip 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. The queens got you eliminated.
No, they didn't get me eliminated, because
they were the judges.
They both loved everything I brought that day. Peaches Christ was like, you know, your scene was really strong. It was fun. It was well directed. Like this is all edited out.
So Coco Peru did not look at you and say, that bothers me.
No, Coco Peru said, you know, you're adorable. I loved your character. I love what you did. Like, you know, Peaches Christ, she loved the blue blood. She loved. And then they also said, like, you really grabbed your scene by the balls and directed it.
the blue balls.
Yeah, because, you know, we in those situations where we're doing those acting scenes, there's nobody really telling us what to do. They're like, okay, well, what's your scene? Like, for that challenge, they gave us a general scenario based on our character, but we had to write the lines ourselves. So I had to tell everybody, okay, well, he enters on this line, and then this happens, and then that happens, and then you know. So they said that I did a really good job with the scene, that I really took charge of the challenge and really worked hard, and they loved the look. But then when it came to the Boulets, they said, well, you know, you guys haven't seen her the past, you know, 4 weeks prior, we're just getting tired of this same thing that she's doing, and she's not taking our direction as much. And that's really what it came down to, I think, for me and for Disasterina in the competition, was we were not applying their critiques as much as we could have been. You know, the whole thing with Disasterina and the editing,
staying true to yourselves.
And that's why, I told Disasterina, I said, let's say you are amazing, like, stay true to yourself. Like, she and I, again, we didn't apply those critiques, but, you know, it's just true to our drag. You know, Disasterina, I respected so much for, again, like, she's also like a different kind of monster. She's not, you know, the typical Dragula.
So you're very proud of all the girls that were on your season, and you care deeply for them.
Absolutely. We all get along. Well, yeah. I get along with everybody. I don't know if everybody gets along with everybody per se, but we're all civil, and we all, you know, there's no hard feelings, I don't think, for me.
What would you do to the $10,000 if you would have won it?
I would have taken like half of it and put it towards student loans. The other half would have just gone right back into artistic projects. But, like, probably making a lot of big investments, like really good camera, or I have a good camera set up, pretty good, but, you know, just different investments that were going to make my drag, you know, make it so that I can do more self-produced content, because I think that's really the takeaway for me from the show, is that the Boulets have built... they've built the queer alt scene in LA from the ground up. They built Dragula from the ground up. So now the challenge for all of us is to build whatever we want from the ground up.
Girl, hail Satan. You know, I want to just invite you, because I really believe in your artistry, and we've been talking about this, and you, I really want to thank you so much for the audition video that you did for Cooking with Drag Queens.
The testimonial.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to say, you passed the audition. You're going to be on the next season of Cooking with Drag Queens.
Oh my goodness, I'm so excited. Yeah, I want to know what we're going to cook.
Well, it'll be a secret, sure it'll be something that you'll really, really be able to get to dig down deep into.
Sink my teeth into.
It won't be a catastrophe.
Well, will it be something gross like squid testicle? Testicles.
Well, you've already had
squid
those
tentacles and pig's
dishes.
Feet, anchovy smoothies, and
I just, for the record, if the Boulet brothers ever do the Cooking with Drag Queens show, I promise all the girls, we will get them to eat cockroaches or crickets or
maggots
something.
Well, yeah. You know, the thing about the exterminations is, like, you know, the Boulets have done a lot of crazy shit. The Boulets have done a lot of crazy shit in their career.
Yeah.
And I feel like the drag super monster, like they shouldn't be bothered by any of these exterminations, you know? So, like, I knew I had that down, sure, because there was really, at that point, nothing was going to fucking scare me. So, but again, like, you got to do, like, the next level of, like, alternative drag for me is, like, doing crazy shit on stage. Any given show should be its own extermination challenge, like, in my mind. Like, you should really put yourself through it, you know? Be in a crazy, uncomfortable costume, perform in it, you know, throw shit at people, or, you know, whatever. Like, spit out some, you know, blood and eat it again and do, you know, like, that to me is, like, it's just as much a part of the training, the exterminations, as, like, any of the other challenges.
I asked Swanthula, the shorter of the two of them. That's the only way you can distinguish them.
Yeah.
I said, if you come on Cooking your Drag Queens, we're going to get you to eat, like, crickets or maggots or something.
Oh,
that
would be fun.
And she said, don't you dare.
That'd be, like, a fun little appetizer, like, a, you know, because they sell crickets, like as, like, you know, snacks, like potato chips or popcorn or whatever. Like,
well, yeah, well, how
different flavorings.
Cricket tacos.
Yeah, let's fucking do it.
Would you eat? I have never eaten bugs myself.
You've eaten bugs. You just don't know you've eaten bugs.
What do you mean?
Well, because bugs get in your food all the time.
Well, don't they say that on average you eat like 8 spiders a year or something? Yeah. Because spiders like walk into your mouth and it's like, yeah.
Something like that. They go in there and you just swallow them whole. Mm. But also, too, you know, they some things are made the... What was it? We used to, when I worked at the champagne bar, we used to have these champagne cookies that were served, and they were kind of pink colored, right? Oh. And the reason why they were pink is because they were colored with cochineal, which is a little bug, a little red bug that people use for dyes and,
interesting,
you know, lipstick.
You see, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So there are bugs in some of the things you eat, and you just don't know it.
Right.
Now, let's get into some news before we wrap up here. Mark, you're going to be very excited about this. They're developing a live action film of Daphne and Velma from Scooby-Doo, the origin story of the two girl characters from the series.
How they became scissor sisters? Or what did they?
I would imagine this is also the prequel to the hit TV show, The L Word.
I imagine because, you know, Velma always seems very, very dykey to me. So I imagine they went to an all-girl school.
Miss Velma is
or
a complete dyke. And of course, you know, Shaggy is a stoner. Mm-hmm. And Scooby is actually Lady Bunny in a dog suit.
Can you do a Lady Bunny as Scooby Doo? Just say, I want some Scooby snacks.
Jinkies, girl. Yeah. Or and you know, Fred is a big old queen.
He's a big old queen, and that's the funny thing. It's like I was always attracted to Daphne, and she was so in love with Fred, and Fred had nothing to do with her.
I feel
her.
Like Daphne is the fag hag.
Yeah. Well, she's also like the little gay boy too. That's just like, why isn't this boy interested in me?
Yes. Yes. I see that. I totally see that.
Like, I am in love with him.
Okay. What do you know that Daphne and Velma both have last names?
Of course.
Do you know, Erica, their last names?
No, I don't.
Mark?
Well, I know Daphne's last name is Blake.
And Velma?
Dwitty.
Dinkley, sorry.
Chinky Dinky.
Dinkley.
Dinkley. So the origin story talks about how they met up in high school, I guess, and before they joined up with the Mystery Incorporated and Scooby and the gang to solve mystery.
And it's gonna be starring Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman. they're just gonna mop their lace fronts from Practical Magic and just, you know, do it that way.
I think this is gonna have a very much.
It'll be a movie or cartoon.
It's a live action movie. And it's going to have very much like Pitch Perfect, kind of a campy spin to that. So it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. And, you know, introduce.
If you say Scooby. So.
You're skeptical about it.
I'm kind of skeptical.
Why?
Because the Scooby-Doo movies with were terrible.
Freddie Prinze Jr.
With Freddie Prinze Jr. With
wasn't
that
it Sarah
bad...
Michelle, Sarah Michelle Gellar as Daphne?
They're married, right? Aren't they married?
They got married because of that film.
They fell in love.
They fell in love with the making of the movie. So
and then Janine Garofalo as Velma was everything.
That's true.
But then they had like a cartoon Scooby, right?
Yeah, it was a CGI one.
It was
one.
A CGI one, yeah. So, and it was
Matthew Lillard as Shaggy
from the Scream movies.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, he's hot to me. He was back then.
Chris Pratt from Jurassic World and Parks and Recreation and his wife, Anna Faris, have filed for divorce.
Finally, I've been waiting for her to get out of the way so I can move in.
No, I just want her to guest star in the Scary Movie spinoff with the black girl as the main actress.
That would be nice.
You know Brenda? Yeah, Brenda from Scary Movies. She's the one that's in the movie theater. She's like, oh, this movie's good. Shakespeare, look. I want her to do her own movie. Just and Brenda.
Golly, Jim Nabors from Gomer Pyle.
Who?
From the Andy Before Griffith Show.
He was the garage mechanic on
Andy Griffith
on
show.
The Andy Griffith Show, and then the people liked him so much because he was very funny. So he got his own. He enlisted in the Marines, and then he got his own TV show, and it was on for a number of years. And he was Gomer Pyle, and he was in the Marines, and so it was him being kind of like a goofball, lovable person, but always a fuck up in so many ways. And so the sergeant was always angry and mad at him. But he came out like I don't know how many years ago, 10 years ago.
I think it was in the 80s.
No, he didn't come out.
Or he was outed in the tabloid press.
Yeah,
first. Sure. Mm-hmm. And then he finally came out when he was in the process of getting married to his longtime partner.
He's lived in Hawaii since like the 60s or 70s. But what's funny about him is like I found out like, you know, back in the day before the internet that he was gay from these queens that I used to work with at a restaurant when I was in college. And I found out that he was gay at the same time I found out that Rock Hudson was gay because he said those two used to sleep together.
Interesting.
And Jim, show him a picture of Jim Nabors, and you can see like Jim Nabors is like, you know, he's just like kind of like a goofy looking comedic actor kind of guy, and then Rock Hudson is this like gorgeous man. And so it's interesting.
Oh, I would sit on his face.
You're half Jim Nabors.
But then again, yeah, but that's my type, is like kind of Hooky, skinny and nerdy and weird looking. But like I also really find Anthony Perkins hot in Psycho.
He's cute.
He was sexy.
He was bisexual, yeah.
He was bisexual, for sure.
Well, he died of AIDS, I think.
Yes, I believe he did.
So, Jim Nabors said that he had trouble watching the opening credits to Gomer Pyle when the series was playing on syndication because he knew many of the Marines that he marched alongside with in that opening sequence, and a lot of them had been killed in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the sitcom did take place during the Vietnam War, but never addressed the war specifically.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Yeah, so it's...
I don't really know the Andy Griffith Show too well.
It's with the...
I know the Dick Van Dyke Show.
It's considered one of the classic television spinoffs at a time period, you know, in the 1960s where a lot of television, you know, was black and white, of course, but also very caught up with a very wholesome, soothing picture of Americana. And because of that, I think it overlooked a lot of conflict and tension that people had at the time.
Well, wasn't that kind of the thing with the... I'm blanking on the name, Jesus. But the wife and Dick Van Dyke, Mary Tyler Moore.
Yeah.
The Mary Tyler Moore Show wasn't the idea or the theory that it was. It was still, you know, it was the Dick Van Dyke Show, but like she divorce Dick Van Dyke?
Well, they were going to have her be a widow, right? In that show.
But then she divorced. Yeah.
And then I think they were going to have her be a divorcee. And then they were just like, let's just have her be a single woman. But just having a single woman starring in a TV show, living alone by herself in that time period was really kind of shocking to a lot of people.
Going out for like the first episode, because we watched it. I went in school. You know, I went to school for dramatic writing. So I took a TV history class. And we watched the pilot.
Where they skipped Andy Griffin.
Well, yeah, somehow. But we watched the pilot episode of Mary Tyler Moore, and she's out there looking for a job, and she's just moving into this new unfamiliar place, new city. Mm-hmm. Like,
do you know who was a lifelong friend of Jim Nabors? Was filmmaker Ron. I'm blanking on his name now.
Ron Howard.
Oh, well,
he played a little boy.
He was a little boy, right?
And Ron Howard in Happy Days?
Yeah, but he played Opie in the Andy Griffith Show.
That's right. Okay, yeah.
And so Jim Nabors actually routinely would take all the kids on the set to the movies. He was he was kind of like the nice uncle that did a lot of great things for everybody. So
I'd sit on his lap.
And he had a really good voice, and so he sold a shit ton of albums growing up as a kid. You'd always hear his albums like being sold on television. But there were like songs you'd never really want to listen to as a kid. It was It's Good to Kiss the Green Grass of Home. Like a lot of those like ballads, kind of a lot of Christian stuff.
His most famous song ever was, "Oh my papa, to me you were so wonderful." And a lot of the humor was that he had this high voice. And so when he started singing, it was this deep, rich bass or baritone.
Maybe he had maybe he put on an accent like Disasterina.
Maybe it's right.
Yeah, it was definitely a fake accent, right?
Okay.
Erica Clash, I'm really looking forward to cooking with you.
Same.
On Cooking Let's with Drag Queens.
I'm excited for eating too.
Yeah. What kind of foods do you really get your goat going?
Well, my
boyfriend squid. Yes,
in addition
shakes.
To all those. Well, my boyfriend is from Germany. So we've made a fair amount of German dishes. There's one in particular called Krautspätzle, which is like a sauerkraut. I love sauerkraut, by the way. It's sauerkraut with like a doughy kind of noodly thing and cheese and onions. And for Thanksgiving, we went to New York, you know, where I'm from, for Thanksgiving. He made a German-style potato salad. So we like to cook that kind of stuff together.
You know, Americans really kind of recoil in horror at German potato salad.
It's good.
I like
it. It's a lot lighter. See, like, I never cared for potato salad because it has so much mayonnaise in it, usually, the American kind.
Sure.
But we use Miracle Whip, so it has, like, this zesty kind of tanginess to it. It's like a little bit of mustard. It's really good. It's not what you think it is. It's really, really light.
And do you like any kind of like fruits and vegetables?
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
strawberries.
Sure. I love strawberries.
Bananas.
As like a snack. Well, that's the other thing.
Peaches.
My boyfriend loves to make like fruit milkshake. So like he'll just put some bananas and strawberries in a blender with some ice or not ice, like we've done it with ice cream, we've done it with buttermilk, which is regular milk, but we love to do that kind of stuff, yeah.
And peaches.
Yummy.
Peaches Christ.
Yeah.
Peaches is not the one, just for the record, that sent you home.
No. From what I heard, Peaches was actually not expecting me to go home that episode. Mm-hmm. So I'm really blessed that, you know, the last two episodes, you know, because now I live in San Francisco, like we had two San Francisco legends seeing me on that platform, especially because San Francisco has been so underrepresented on Drag Race.
Sure.
So I hope we can get, and you know, the talent there is so underappreciated. So it was really awesome to see two San Francisco legends on this show and me, like, you know, being judged by them. And that was just really a real honor. And also a blessing that, you know, Alaska, Coco, and Peaches, they all had nothing bad to say about what I did.
Well, I want to congratulate you on making it through four episodes.
Coming back
for another one, because you came back from the dead, basically, with that letter.
Well, I know. It was so weird. I was like, I can't believe I'm getting screen time from beyond the grave. Mm-hmm. Like, it's so weird. And I didn't, they made it sound like they kind of glossed over a lot of the letter, but everything that I wrote got in there. So yeah, I was on five episodes, and then I kind of made an appearance from beyond the grave. And then, you know, with Dragula, last last season, they did a Last Supper where everybody came back from the dead to hash out like which of the top three queens
sucked the most. Yeah, really.
Well, that's how it went last season, because the whole thing last season was that, you know, Melissa didn't deserve to win because she wasn't, you know, a true monster, so they said. Anyway, so I'm excited to see, or I'm excited for you all to see, you know, what happens once the top three is you know, emerges on the show.
Well, you're going to be watching it too, because you weren't there anymore. You went home. So these are your friends still there, kind of like seeing what kind of shit they talk about you behind your back.
Well, I mean, I know everything that happens more or less. I don't know the details because I wasn't there, but I'm excited for you all to see the rest of the season.
I'm looking forward to it. You can watch Dragula on YouTube.
Yes. World of Wonders YouTube channel, mm-hmm. WoW Presents in the U.S. It's also airing in Canada on Out TV. And we just got picked up in Australia by SBS Viceland. So that's going to start airing in February 4th, if I'm remembering correctly.
That's amazing news.
Yeah. And we just got picked up for season 3. Like halfway through the season, we got picked up for the next season, which is really exciting.
And that means that their funding is coming primarily from Out TV in Canada.
I don't know the details of how it's funded, but I think, you know, from what I've heard, Out TV is really, it really is to Dragula what Logo was to Drag Race. Like, they are really on board because, if I'm remembering correctly, it is their most watched show on Out TV.
Oh, wonderful.
So they really love what we're doing, and they appreciate it. So they picked us up for next season. And I'm imagining, you know, in addition to all our sponsors, because we have a lot of sponsors on the show too. But in addition to the sponsors, Out TV is really, really making the show happen in a lot of ways. And it's very exciting. Yeah.
Well, I'm really proud that you got as far as you did, and you're certainly a winner in our eyes.
Oh, thank you.
For sure.
And, you know, everybody's talking about an All-Stars, Dragula. I mean, I obviously think it's too early to even think about that, and the last thing I want to do is compete right now. Like, some bar competition in San Francisco was like, hey, do you want to do this? I was like, no. I just finished fucking doing Dragula. But anyway.
Listen, after you've been pierced by needles, you can do anything, girl.
Well, that's true, but you know.
Like, I'll entertain your offers.
But, you know, this is not necessarily the last time you're going to see me on television, you know.
Oh, I'm sure not. Thank you, Erica, for coming on the podcast.
Thank you. I love you guys so much.
Love you too. I want to remind folks that we can't do this podcast without your support. So if you're not a Plus member yet, sign up today at feastoffun.com/plus, because your contribution to this show is what makes this show happen. Or maybe you'd just like to make an end of the year holiday donation, and you can do that at feastoffun.com/donate.
Mark, what do people get when they join in into feastoffun.com?
They have access to our 13 years of podcasting. Next year we'll be on our 14th year, so we have hundreds of hours, I guess thousands of hours of audio programming, interviews with some of the top drag queens in the world, some of the best comedians, some of the greatest queer actors.
You can actually hear the real Lady Bunny.
Mm-hmm. Not lame imitations here between the two of them.
Well, you know, throw in a bottle of poppers and you got my donation. So
free poppers.
Free bottle of poppers with every order right now.
You know, I have a lot of video cassette tapes that I need to just clean up.
Get those heads clean.
And yes. This is a great t-shirt, and we want to give you one. For participating with us, is a I'm not an evil queen, I just got a bad edit t-shirt. Oh. You just have to promise me you'll take a picture of it and post it on your Instagram.
Of course. You know, I got to take off my makeup with something.
Mm-hmm. Listen, this is actually printed with purple glitter ink.
Oh, that could backfire really bad on someone's face.
Honey, this is no on-demand, you know, laser printer stuff. This is like high-end glitter ink.
Oh, thank you so much,
it's
you guys.
Really pretty and surrounded by thorns and purple roses.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Just like you. In your coffin when you sleep at night.
Hey, girl.
You look good in that Feast of Fun t-shirt. Where'd you get it?
At feastoffun.com/store.
Oh.
Bye, Erica.
Bye-bye. Thank you so much.
Bye.